Hello and welcome to Comics in the Golden Age. This is Mike Lane, and I want to welcome you back for a holiday episode. We do these annually, so I'm always enjoy them. And I have a very special guest with me tonight. I have Mr. Kyle Binning of King Size Comics Giant Size Fun Podcast. Hey, Kyle. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me aboard.
Good. Kyle is a returning guest, and I'm very happy to have him back. We have somewhat similar tastes. We're both big fans of the Marvel family and Karl Barks Duck Comics, for example, so I'm glad he could join me. Tonight, speaking of Karl Barks, we're going to be talking about Duck Comics. And we're going to actually be covering two different things. The first one is going to be a Golden Age Duck Family comic by Karl Barks. The second one, we are going to jump a few decades ahead, so it's obviously not going to be Karl Barks, but it is somewhat related, and I'm going to hold off explaining that. I'll let Kyle get to that in a little while. But the story I'm going to start out with is called Toyland, which was first published in 1948 in Donald and Mickey's Merry Christmas. Now, this was a Firestone giveaway comic, meaning it was one of seven comics put out by Dell between 1943 and 1949, exclusively to be given away at Firestone dealers and stores. Like most Karl Barks stories, this has been reprinted numerous times around the world, but I read it in Fantagraphics' 2011 collection Lost in the Andes, which is, of course, part of their complete Karl Barks library. Toyland opens with Donald and his nephews receiving an emergency telegram from Santa Claus, who needs them to come to the North Pole. That evening, he picks them up in his sleigh and says that he needs the boys to try out all of the toys and let him know which is their favorite. He explains that he's been giving away the same type of toys year after year without knowing what kids really want. After arriving in the North Pole, they start with the pogo sticks, which does not go well for Donald, who bursts through the roof and lands headfirst in a nearby snow hill. Donald also joins them in trying out some skis, which the boys enjoy, but Donald loses control and ends up in a cave with a very angry polar bear. After he escapes, they decide to try the archery equipment. Since the arrows have plungers on the end instead of arrowheads, they convince Donald to let them try to knock an apple off his head. And thank goodness they do not have real arrowheads, as every single one ends up landing on his face. Next up is baseball, which goes much better since Donald covers himself up in all the safety equipment he can find. Later, they find some model cars and each decide to take a ride, although Huey opts to dress up in a fake police officer's uniform to direct their traffic. It turns out that he made the right call as Donald and his brothers end up in a three-car pileup. They breeze through testing a few more toys without too much difficulty, at least until Donald makes a home with building blocks and somehow traps himself inside. He soon also takes a speeding toy train to the gut, but things calm down just in time for Santa to show up. Santa asks which toys they like best, and the boys can only declare all of them. Worried, he asks Donald for the notes that he was supposed to be jotting down as they went along, but Donald was having so much fun, he forgot to take any. Santa laughs, relieved to discover that boys and girls never really change, which was all he wanted to know. And so Christmas morning is the same for the world as Christmas has always been. Okay, so I'll turn it over to you, Kyle, first. What do you think of this one?
Oh, I like this one quite a bit. It's just a nice, fun, little good humor story here by Karl Barks. Typical kind of Barks story format. You either had your one-page gags, kind of your four-page humor romp that was a little bit longer of a joke that, typically ended with a setup. If it was a Donald story, usually a laugh at his expense. Or if it was a Scrooge story, it often left Scrooge looking like a hypocrite. And you had the 8 to 10 page kind of fun story format. Those would kind of be the ones you'd typically see in like Walt Disney's comics and stories every month. And it's a little longer story, typically kind of humorous or fun, but it was long enough that you could get some good back and forth between the characters, and Barks could lay down some good characterization and a lot of interaction between the characters, so you could really learn more about them while you're enjoying this, kind of fun humor. I guess if I had to compare it to the animation side of Disney, those kind of 8 to 10 page stories a lot of times were more like the, kind of the classic Disney shorts from the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And then you had where Barks really kind of made his bones in the 16 to 20 page adventures that really kind of had that epic scope, like the old Castle Secrets or the Lost in the Andes story. So this one here definitely falls in that 8 to 10 page format. It's a fun story. It's got a lot of nice physical humor gags throughout the story, like you mentioned. And really, if you're going to do a funny animal story, which was a pretty significant genre back in the golden age to really make those stories work. And really what made the good ones stand out, typically like the ones Barks did, was how well those physical gags and the physical comedy jokes landed. And all of them land here. That's why he was known as the good duct artist, and, you know, was a induction in that first inaugural class into the, was it the Iser Hall of Fame or the Jack Kirby Hall of Fame? I think it was those two, and then Barks made the first class, and it's why he's so highly regarded. Is just what a master he is with the comedy stories, getting those jokes to land. You know, I'm a big fan of funny animal comic books from the Golden Age. I have quite a few Bugs Bunny comics and Woody Woodpeckers that were also published by Dell, and rarely do those successfully and consistently land the physical gags like Barks does here and in most of his stories. And that's really why he is heralded as so timeless and great over 70 years later. You know, a lot of good back and forth between them. You really kind of get to who Donald is in this, right? It's just a free giveaway comic meant to sell some fire some tires to your parents. But you really get what Donald's all about here. You know, you have the jokes at his expense here with the suction cup arrows landing on his face and kind of a, you know, a nod to William Tell. You get him crashing on his skis into the back of the bear cave. You get his pogo stick sinking into the snow drift and burying him head deep. He's really kind of that everyman who has everything go wrong. And you get all that in this little 8-page story here. So it's a good one. All the characters are on model. He's a fantastic artist, great at pacing, and a great writer as well. So there's a lot to love here in this little giveaway.
Yeah, I enjoy this one. When it comes to Barks stories, I tend to lean more towards the longer adventure tales, the more epic ones, than I do like the short gag strips. But having said that, when it does come to the ones that are more gag oriented, I do much prefer these 8 to 10 page ones versus like the 1 or 2 page. I think, you know, several of the Firestone ones were quite entertaining in particular. Yeah, and we should mention just as background, I believe if I remember correctly, I think the Firestone started in 43, and I think the first 1 or 2 years was reprint stories primarily.
Yes, I believe that's correct. I think most of the Donald story, the two Donald stories, I think in those first 2 years were, I think one of them was even like an Easter season reprint. It was really nothing even Christmas related. But yeah, I believe those were just reprints from Walt Disney comics and stories. And I believe it was then started with 1945 that they became original Christmas themed content.
Were both reprints, Barks? I know at least one of them was, but I can't remember if both actually
recall. I think one might have been Walt Kelly, but maybe I'm confusing that, because I can picture the Donald in an Easter costume cover that one of the stories was from that I know was a Walt Kelly cover.
Okay, then only one of them had to be Barks then that they reprinted before. But then they ended up going and commissioning original material after that, including, fortunately, thank God, from Barks as well. And again, I'm a big fan of a lot of those Firestone stories. And like I said, I prefer when it goes to the gag end of Barks' work, I much prefer these longer stories. And one of the difficulties of, you know, synopsizing a story like this is so much of it depends on his art and the dynamism in the way he portrays, you know, Donald getting injured, going into the cave, the polar bear coming out. Oh, it's really hard to convey that to people just summarizing the story. But if you do, you know, for anyone out there who's familiar with Barks' work, obviously you'll see how reading these events, how he would make these things into magic. And, you know, his art is much more dynamic and entertaining than I could possibly describe in just summarizing it. But I think this is definitely one of the best of this 8 to 10 page format that he would use. And I also liked just the whole premise that when Santa has an emergency, his first instinct is, oh, I better contact Donald and the nephews.
Yeah, the Mr. Reliable Donald, the never succumbs to crazy emotional reactions. Surely this is going to go well. Yeah.
Although, in fairness, he contacted the nephews. Really, they were the ones he wanted. It wasn't Donald was just the messenger.
That's true, and you get a 3-for-1 deal there by making one stop. So. One thing I've always found humorous about Christmas stories in any of the Disney universe, but especially Barks, he revisits it quite a bit and actually employs Santa as a story device quite a bit, is, you know, all the characters that we see throughout the Duckburg or Mousetown universe, right? They're ducks, mice, dogs, or cats, some form of those characters, right? But Santa always remains humanoid, and so do his elves. That's just a curious little break, I guess, that, you know, they don't anthropomorphize him and turn him into an animal at all in any of these stories. He always remains human, and so do his elves in the rest of a, you know, an anthropomorphic animal world.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but that's true. That is, you know, unique in the setting of the Duckburg universe.
Do you have the Kaboom Studios hardcover, the Christmas classics, that has, it doesn't have Toyland, but I think it has like the last three or four Firestone Bark stories in it. I don't know if you had that by chance.
No, I do not have that one. Actually, but, you know what?
But no, I do. You probably have the, do you have the Gladstone Christmas album that has all the ones in there?
Yeah, it's funny. The Gemstone and Gladstone, like, thicker ones, like the Gladstone that they would do in like the Marvel graphic novel size.
Yeah, like those. Yeah, like the, what they call them, they call them, you know, like the Barks album, comic albums or whatever. They're like the magazine size.
Exactly. And then the Gemstone, like prestige format books, for many, many years, those were primarily all the ones I would get. Okay. I wasn't like constantly, like every month I would go to the comic store for a long time and get Duck books and stuff. But when I would see those kind of things, I would grab them.
Yeah.
So those are primarily, I don't have many, other than unless you go back to like the 40s and 50s. I don't have that many like single issue like type comics and stuff of the Disney books.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, aside from the few big ones, they're relatively cheap. I mean, a lot of the like the, you know, first appearance of the Biggie Boy or the Beagle Boys or the first appearance of Professor Von Drake or Gyro and stuff. I mean, those ones set me back like $20 each for, you know, like a very good plus or fine copy. So, I mean, they're pretty overlooked. I mean, most of them are pretty affordable aside from, you know, Christmas on Bear Mountain and Donald Duck Finds Pirate Gold. I mean, those are really kind of the only two that are, you know, set you back hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, I've been going back in the last few years. As far as the books in the 50s, I've gotten quite a few of them and early 60s as well. It's just the more modern books, I don't have that many of them from like the 70s on.
Yeah.
I don't have too many Gold Key ones. I mostly have the Dell ones.
Yeah. Yeah, the Gold Key ones, they just don't do it for me. I think what a great influence Helen Meyer had at Dell. I mean, Western was the one putting all the material together, but you just had such a better final finished product when it came from Dell than when they took publishing in house there.
Yeah. What year did Barks finally retire from doing
that? You know, I think kind of full time, I want to say it was like 67, but there was, okay, you know, he would still write the occasional story, and then drawing was even rarer. I mean, I think he took a step back, I want to say around 1967, but I know, I think there was a Junior Woodchuck's book that he wrote then into the 70s, but I think he only did art on one issue maybe.
Oh, and you've made the point, an accurate point online recently, that the coloring of the covers and stuff got a little more unusual into the Gold Key years than it had been.
Yep.
And just don't have the appeal. Now, not all of them. There's some I like. But as a general rule, the Dell covers tend to be much more aesthetically pleasing than what you see in the Gold Key years.
For sure. And they reuse so much of that cover image, and just by putting a different color backdrop on it or changing the color, it's just like, oh man, I don't know. 70s, the decade that style forgot, I guess. I don't know what was going on there, but it's even like when you come across the Bugs Bunny shorts from the 70s and stuff. And a lot of those too are just almost like retools of earlier story points. They do a slight twist, but they completely redraw it and everything in the, you get the kind of goofy pink and orange stylized WB intro to the beginning instead of the kind of the classic Merry Melodies Looney Tunes one. And then the art style just looks a little different too. And it's just, no, I'd rather take the 40s or 50s version of this. So,
well, I do have a question for you about the original run, the Dell books, putting aside the first issue of Walt Disney's Comics and Stories, putting that one aside, is there a particular issue from the 40s or 50s that you really want to get, that's like at the top of your list of one you want to track down that you don't have?
You know, I want the Christmas on Bear Mountain there, the 178. I mean, I think if you're vigilant and looked at it all year round and have it saved as a search on eBay, I bet you could get a pretty decent copy for under $100 if you really kept your eye on it. I think I have most of them. Really, the, and it's one of the rare, because I actually think she came out in Gold Key, right? Was the, it's the first appearance of Magicka Dispel. That is crazy. That's even, that's gone crazy. I mean, that one will land you over $100, but I can remember 10 months ago, it was a $25 or $30 book. I think her popularity has resurged with the current DuckTales cartoon, even though that's ending. So I don't know. But prices, I think, will probably come back down to normal here a few years down the road on that one. But no, I mean, I get in moods where I want to pull the trigger on a bunch of them, and I can typically find most of the issues that I'm after for $25 or less in a acceptable condition that I'd want to buy them. So, you know, I do, there's a lot of the, I need to go back and look at what all stories are in them and stuff, but there's a lot of great, you know, Walt Kelly, especially Christmas covers early on in the runs.
Gorgeous.
That I want to add. You know, I wish they just, especially if they were going to just pick one title to just reprint everything, it should be Walt Disney's comics and stories. I wish Fantagraphics would do that. There are a lot of, I mean, Bark stuff is definitely the best, but there is a lot of stuff that gets overlooked, especially Duck stuff, that just never gets reprinted.
As much as I love Carl Barks, a lot of his stuff has been reprinted how many times over the years in different formats, and there's all this other wealth of material that has never even been touched. And Fantagraphics appears, based on how many Disney Masters volumes they have coming and other stuff, they must be doing well with the Disney material, because they have a lot of stuff coming down the road.
Yeah, I imagine so. Yeah, I'd like to see some more. Like, I like Tony Strobel's stuff. I mean, he's pretty much just trying to ape Barks, but he does it well, and there's some nice original stories in there. He's done some Christmas stories that I enjoy, that, you know, the Christmas stuff, especially if it appeared in Christmas Parade, has been more likely been reprinted over the years, but not everything has. And so I guess that's really kind of what my focus is right now. I'm trying to get every single original Christmas Parade issue. I have most of the Dell ones. I think I'm missing like the first three. And then after that, you know, there was some with a Christmas Parade banner that actually showed up in the Dell Giant series. I see you've spotlighted some of those covers recently in the last few days on your Twitter posts and stuff. And I have all three of those, all the three of the Disney Christmas ones that came out in that series. And then there were a couple other Christmas-themed giants that were different than the Christmas Parade that still came out in the Dell banner. I have all those, so I think I'm down to just those last, or the first three issues from the Dell run, and then I'll have all those. So.
Do you have any of the Firestone issues?
I do not. And that's one, too. It's right now, coming up on Christmas time is kind of a dual-bladed sword there. It's because it's coming up on Christmas time, a lot more of those issues show up on eBay, but there's also a lot more people hunting for them. So yeah, those prices go a lot higher on Christmas time. But if you watch some of those, they'll stay listed in January or February, and the price really dropped. I mean, I had an opportunity to, I think it was, get the first one for like $40 last year. And I was off hunting something else at that point. So I'm like, I'm not going to spend $40 on that right now. I want to spend $40 on this instead or whatever. So yeah, then if you keep an eye out and look for them at other times of the year, I mean, you can get them at a much more affordable price. So yeah, at some point I would like to add those. Frankly, I would love to, for someone to write, or I would just do it of like a Christmas in the 40s series of hardcovers of like each year. And you reprint any public domain Golden Age comic book story that falls on that year. You spotlight, at least at the very least, covers of some of the other ones and give like a synopsis of the stories, but then you can highlight, hey, these were the Christmas movies that were out at this time, and you know, this is when White Christmas hit as a single for Bing Crosby and was awesome. And then look at holiday promos and stuff, right? Because I mean, Firestone, they did this, but you know, they had records, they had these awesome, I've been looking, you can find a lot of them on eBay fairly cheap, a Firestone like Christmas catalog ads with the, you know, 2 to 4 page kind of flyers of what you can get at the Firestone store that's Christmas themed and all that stuff. And I don't know, that stuff's just, I would love to get paid to dig into that stuff further and write a book about it.
Do you have the I think Craig Yeo put it together about 10 years or so ago, a collection of Golden Age Christmas comics. Do you have that one?
No, I do not. I have not seen that one. I know he's done like, you know, like the weird comic book stories, you know, a lot of like Fletcher Hank stuff, and you know, I've seen those reprints, but no, I did not know there was a Christmas one of those.
I hope I'm remembering that correctly. I've gotten several of his And I have a nice one he did, and I got, I'm blanking on the name of it, but it came out around the same time, and it was a Golden Age character. It had a little Lulu, had some Captain Marvel, and also had a bunch of, you know, now forgotten great comics. Oh, yes, it is. I looked it up. It's The Great Treasury of Christmas Comic Book Stories.
Hmm.
And I do not have it. I've been meaning to get it for years. And it's still available. You know, we need to both get it before this episode airs, because there's two copies left on Amazon right now. The Great Treasury of Christmas Comic Book Stories is the name of it. And it looks like it is, if I remember correctly, it is full of Golden Age. Yeah, Golden Age comics. Walt Kelly is in there. John Stanley, Dan Noonan, other people. Yeah, it looks like there's two. So by the time this airs, you and I may have both gotten the last copies that are available on Amazon. So I apologize to anyone who's listening who also wants it. But it sounds right up your alley. And mine,
yeah.
And honestly, until this moment, I actually thought it was out of print and not available, which is the reason I hadn't picked it up, because I've been meaning to for so many years. And I just kind of assumed, to be honest, I missed my chance. For me, I right now at the top of my list of comics from back then I want to get is, I really still want to get the Three Caballeros four color issue.
I have that one.
Yeah, I do not have that one. And it's not outrageously priced. It's like $100 or so usually, but I just can't drop $100 anytime I want on a comic. So,
yep.
But it is on my list of ones to get, and those Firestone ones, just because those covers are just glorious. And, you know, most of them have Carl Barks stories in them. Yep. So those are next on my list. And like you, I don't own any of them right now. But like you said, I will give it a chance in January or February and check it again and see if some of them have gotten cheaper. One of the issues I've had this year is, over the last few years, I've gotten a lot of Dell Comics, not just Disney, but in particular Disney, going to conventions. Because I don't know if it's the aging comic audience or something, but I found lots of good deals at tables of Dell Comics of all sorts from the 40s through the 60s. And I've completed, not completed, but I've gone a long way to completing a lot of gold key titles from the 60s I collect, like Twilight Zone, stuff like that, Magnus. And I've gotten quite a few of 40s and 50s and 60s Disney comics, you know, the Uncle Scrooge title, Donald Duck title, and Walt Disney's comics and stories and some four color issues going through the boxes and deals I've seen at conventions. So obviously not being able to go to convention this year because of COVID has put kind of a dent in that run. And unlike other things where I find great deals online, I tend to have found better deals actually at conventions for those books than I find when I look online at eBay and such. So I don't know if it's just me, but that's been my experience. So this year has kind of been a big pause on filling those gaps in my collection.
Yeah, I haven't gone to any convention since the spring before my son was born. But this year I was going to start going, and I was going to take him along. We were going to go down to Kansas City and try to meet Roy Thomas. And I think Don Rosa was supposed to be down there and stuff. And so I was like, oh man, this would be a great one to go to. And then all this hit. So,
would that have been your first time meeting Roy Thomas?
Yeah. Yep.
You know, me too. This year was supposed to be the first time. We have a convention up in DC, which, you know, I live in Northern Virginia, but I work in DC, and there's a convention center literally down the street from my office, and they have a convention every year called AwesomeCon. And Roy Thomas was going to be there for the first time. It was going to be my first opportunity to actually see him at a con, but of course it got canceled, understandably, due to COVID. And, you know, normally, you know, canceled, you know, conventions, it's sad. It's not a big deal, though. We'll have other time. But, you know, Roy Thomas isn't a spring chicken, so, you know, I was really excited to have the opportunity to meet him, and I really, really, really hope I'll get the chance to do so again.
Yep.
With that, I am going to get us back on track here.
Okay.
And I gave a hint earlier. We were going to jump ahead a few decades, and it is semi-related to Karl Barks, and I'll give you a chance to kind of explain what you're going to cover and let you go ahead and do it.
All right. Well, this time out, I have Another Christmas on Bear Mountain. And so this was originally published in Italy in Topolino number 2717. So Topolino is actually kind of the Mickey Mouse flagship title over in Italy. I believe those come out weekly or fortnightly, every 2 weeks or so. And, you know, there's been almost 3,000 of them, well, probably at this point, over 3,000 of them. At the time the story was published in 2007, you know, 2,700 of these issues. And so they do come out. They're much more like prestige format size, oversized. And so they are an anthology, have quite a few different comic stories in each one of them there. So nice little read. Very lucky that the Italians and as well as other countries in Europe, very lucky that they have such a strong Disney comic publishing schedule.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, original content out on a weekly basis in a big oversized format, you know, 100 pages or so of new content every week, that would be awesome. Whereas here in the U.S., there are no new Disney comics being published. The only ones that were getting published, but that has stopped since COVID hit, were from IDW, and they were actually all reprints from original European material. So that's right. If you grew up being a Carl Barks fan and a Don Rosa fan and loved all the Gemstone and Gladstone and Disney comics in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, and you wanted to grow up to write and draw Disney comics when you got older, yeah, tough luck. You can't do that if you live in the U.S. So this one is another Christmas on Bear Mountain. It was originally published in Italy in 2007. It was translated by Gary Leach for U.S. debut in Uncle Scrooge number 9, which was from IDW, which under the legacy numbering would have been Uncle Scrooge number 413. And that went on sale December 16th of 2015. So it's been 5 years since this was published in the U.S. and 13 years since it was originally published in Italy. It is written by Tito Ferrazzi, penciled by Giorgio Cavazzano. Oh, God, these sounded so good in my head when I read it before.
You do it better than I would have. So
inked by, my apologies to the creators and anybody of Italian heritage. Inked by Sandro Somalian, and colored and lettered by Travis and Nicole Settler as part of the Disney Italia studio. Probably more on that later, but that studio. Our story opens with Scrooge calling in his butler Quackmar into his money bin to give him a Christmas present, which actually happens to be none other than a used walking stick, which Quackmar had given Scrooge just a few Christmases ago. Scrooge returns to his closet after dismissing Quackmar to dig through more used goods, and he fishes out a bear costume, recalling that time he tried to scare his nephew Donald with it before, which actually harkens back to Scrooge's first appearance in Dell's Four Color Comics number 178, Donald Duck in Christmas on Bear Mountain from 1947, which, you guessed it, was by Carl Barks. So while Scrooge reminisces about that adventure and when Donald came back into his life with Donald's nephews, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, he thinks about how he wishes he was still like that. He wishes he was still his younger, meaner, greedier self. Just then, his thoughts are interrupted by a Santa lookalike. But it isn't Santa. It's Santa's grandpa, Grandpa Claus, who, like Scrooge, fancies himself a penny-pinching miser, and he sees in Scrooge a kindred spirit. In Grandpa Claus's eyes, they are both plagued by these spendthrift, generous relatives who waste away their riches on others, instead of holding on to everything that their hard work has gained them in life. So Grandpa Claus uses the magic at his fingertips to send himself and Scrooge back in time to the fateful Christmas Eve on Bear Mountain. This time, Scrooge's resolve is strengthened, and he is going to successfully pull off his scare of Donald and the nephews. Scrooge looks in the cabin at his four duck relatives, but rather than feel joy as he watches them, you know, celebrating all the Christmas gifts that they have there, instead, he feels greed and anger that they're taking advantage of his generosity. This strengthens his resolve to follow through with his plan to try to rewrite history and scare them all. Scrooge puts on the bear costume and discusses the plan with Grandpa Claus. Meanwhile, inside the cabin, Donald has noticed the bear outside. First, he's scared, but as he starts to peer out there and stare at it more, he notices that it's actually Scrooge in a bear costume. So now he's got all of his confidence up. He's going to play a trick on Uncle Scrooge. And so he surmised Scrooge's plan, and he puts his counterattack into action. He fetches a shotgun from the closet, which he leaves unloaded, of course, you know, to be safe, and heads out into the snowy night to give Scrooge a scare. However, in typical Donald luck, the bear he soon encounters is actually a real bear. It's the same mother bear and her cub that he encountered in that 1947 original story. Donald lets out a blood-curdling scream once he realizes that it's a real bear, and that sends the bear cub scrambling off, tumbling over the mountainside to peril below. The mother follows her cub, And now that Donald has seen that the cub is endangered, he's no longer in danger. He's aware that, you know, his scream is what caused it all. He feels a little guilty, so he fashions a rope out of Huey, Dewey, and Louie's scarves, and he starts rappelling down the side of this cliff. Just as he reaches the scared cub, the stick he had secured the rope to snaps, sending Donald and the bear cub toppling down the cliff. Just as all hope seems lost, their fall slows, and they make a nice, slow, padded landing in the snow, thanks to a little Christmas magic from Grandpa Claus. Scrooge is impressed with Donald's bravery and resolve through the whole adventure in trying to rescue the cub. And he once again, he sees the kindred spirit in Donald, just like he did in that original story back in 1947. At this time, Grandpa Claus tips his hand and reveals his true plan. He's actually quite fond of his grandson, Santa, just as he knows that Scrooge is fond of Donald. He only pulled this ruse to remind Scrooge of his holiday spirit and love for Donald, Huey, Dewey, and Louie. With the lesson learned, a snap of his magic fingers, Grandpa Claus disappears and Scrooge awakes back in his money bin. It must have all been a dream. Or was it? Sitting next to Scrooge in the bear costume is Scrooge's trademark red coat and a note that says, "Enjoy the holidays, Scrooge," signed Grandpa Claus. Mike, what'd you think of this one?
I definitely enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. A few kind of, and this isn't a critique in a negative way, but just things worth observing if you read the story is, obviously the animation, the art style, is very different than Carl Barks. And it's more in keeping with what I've seen a lot of the Italian artists. So it is a little jarring thinking, if you go into this thinking about Bear Mountain, to see a very different sort of art style applied to this than what Carl Barks did. But that's not a negative. You know, I buy Carl Barks stuff wanting to see Carl Barks. I buy other comics wanting to see those artists. So that's not bad. It's just, you know, when you are dealing with the sequel, it's a little bit, takes a few moments to kind of adjust your brain. And also the idea that the only thing that kind of confused me is why it was Santa's grandpa. And my understanding is correct. It was originally the uncle in the European, the Italian story. Is that right?
Oh, I don't know. That would make much more sense.
Yeah, I think I looked it up because I was kind of curious about that angle. And I think if I'm right, I think it was originally the uncle. And it was supposed to be kind of a play on Scrooge and Donald's relationship to have Santa's uncle and him, which makes a little more sense to me and is more fitting. But there was something about a translation issue that made them go in this direction. So when I read that, a kind of a light bulb went off like, oh, well, yeah, that would make a lot more sense than this. Not that this took away from the story at all. It was perfectly fine. I kind of liked the old guy. He was fun. But it just, when I found that it was originally the uncle versus the grandfather, I thought, well, yeah, that matching that dynamic with Scrooge and Donald, I could see where they were coming from when they wrote it that way. But otherwise, I really enjoyed the story and it was a lot of fun. What'd you think?
Well, I mean, you bring up a good point with the translation issue and stuff. And really, I mean, since it's all kind of waved away at the end and it was all a ruse and he's actually fond of whether it be his grandson or his nephew. I mean, from the purpose of the story, why not just make it Santa Claus anyway? I mean, instead of a guy that looks like Santa, it's all going to be, it's all under false pretense anyway. Why not just say, no, it's actually me, Santa. I don't know. You probably read more of these stories than I have by reading the Disney Masters. I think you have more of those collections than I do. So you've probably come across more Italian Uncle Scrooge stories than I have. But the few I have read, either between the Disney Masters or through the IDW reprint Uncle Scrooge series featuring that, you know, European material, it seems like a lot of the Italian portrayals that I've read, they always portray Scrooge as a jerk. It's like he never, in a lot of those stories, he never evolves into the character we see under Barks pin, like in the 50s, you know, where he's still Penny Pincher, but he's still, you know, he's the guy that earned his fortune fair, and he's an adventurer, and he still, you know, has a heart of gold kind of behind that hardened exterior. It seems like a lot more of the Italian stories that I've read, Scrooge is still always kind of a jerk, and his number one goal is to screw Donald out of stuff. So kind of with that backdrop of that's what most of the Italian stories I've read, you know, the first time I was reading this one, I was like, oh no, here we go again. But, you know, it has a much happier ending. You know, it gives Scrooge that kick in the pants to kind of return him back to that likable character that was more in line with how Barks would portray him in the 1950s and 1960s. So I really liked it from that standpoint. And it's also kind of a refresher to see where Scrooge came from in that original 1947 adventure, kind of what his mindset was when he, you know, opened up his cabin hospitality to Donald and the nephews to where he is at the end of the story and kind of where he is now, status quo of the, you know, their permanent fixture in his life that he, you know, he shares his wealth with. So I did like it in that front. You know, there are a ton of European produced Disney comics, but typically from a duck standpoint, I typically like the ones from the Danish duck publications more than Italian ones in general. But this one was really enjoyable, and I think it probably is my favorite Italian duck story I've ever read.
You know, it's funny you suggested that I had read more than you, because I do have a number of the Disney Master books, but you've been reading the IDW sort of reprints that include a lot of them. So I actually went into this thinking you'd probably gotten a greater exposure to them than I had. So now I will say what you said about their portrayal of Scrooge, I've not gotten that sense from reading the Disney Master books.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean, it may just be that, you know, I am basically reading a best of selection. And what they consider kind of the editors are choosing is kind of the creme de la creme of selections. And really half the ones I've read are Mickey Mouse ones. They're not, you know, and frankly, I probably read more Mickey Mouse stories there than I, because my reading of American Disney books has been vast majority, you know, Donald focused. Whereas with the Masters, they're kind of been doing both enough that I've been reading and I've been collecting them. So the duck ones I've read, I haven't gotten that same sense, but that may not be very representative, whereas you may be getting a more accurate view from reading the, you know, IDW and other reprints that are out there. And I do enjoy them. I've always been fascinated, and I'm glad that finally we're at a point where we're really getting a regular influx of them in this country, because I have always been fascinated by this parallel universe out there of this whole other world of Disney comics that's been chugging along for decades now, really going way back to when, you know, Barks was still actively working, of all this whole other universe of Disney books being published, you know, throughout Europe. It's just been fascinating to me. And I do love that we're finally getting a regular output of these comics, whether it's been the IDW books or the Fantagraphics reprints. It reminds me a few years ago, like 6 or 7 years ago, I went with my dad on a trip to Russia. And normally we travel every year. My wife and I would travel every year with my parents on a trip. You know, my mom has passed since then, and we'd still traveled with my dad a few times to other countries. We do international trips together with our kids, with their grandparents. But that year, my dad and I kind of wanted to go to Russia, and my mom and my wife were like, yeah, you guys go ahead and do that. So we went to Russia alone, and our flight connected in Amsterdam, and we spent the night in Amsterdam. And I got off the plane. And, well, no, it wasn't when we got off the plane. It was the next day when we were reboarding. And I was going to a gift shop, and I walked into the gift shop in Amsterdam. And when I went to the magazine and books, because I always want to read something on the plane, they had duck comics. They had not just a few, but they had a whole bunch of duck comics, and they had different formats. And I got two or three of them in these larger size, like kind of similar to what the kind of graphic novel size formats that Gladstone had in the 80s and 90s. And of course, I couldn't read them, but I recognized what some of them was. And it just fascinated me that, you know, in the 2010s, you could go in, and I don't know if they're still there. It's been, you know, 6 or 7 years. But it fascinated me that you can go in an airport in Amsterdam, because when's the last time you saw an American comic book in an American airport? It's been decades. But you could still go in an airport in Amsterdam, and you see Disney comics. And you see Donald. They were almost all Donald Duck comics. And that just blew my mind. So, of course, I had to grab a few. So that, you know, if I wasn't fascinated before, seeing that really excited me that you still had that level of interest and engagement among the population on Disney comic books. I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the ones that really fascinate me and that I really enjoyed is especially been those Northern European ones, you know, like the Denmark and Danish publications. I love especially the Donald and Scrooge stories from that. And I love the Italian Mickey stories. It's just all the few duck comics I read. I mean, there's over 3,000 of them, right? So even if I read 60 issues of IDW's Uncle Scrooge reprints of those, you know, that's a mixture sampling of Danish and Italian. And so even the Italian stories that I read in there are not even scratching the surface of all the content that's out there. So the one that really sticks out in my mind is bothering me was, I think it was the Money Rocket one. That's been a Disney master. Scrooge was pretty unlikable throughout all that one, if I remember correctly.
Well, I've noticed that the Danish ones too, the art tends to be more what we're used to with
Barks. Much more kind of aping that Bucks or that Barks or the kind of the classic, even, you know, 40s and 50s animation style, that house style, much more in line with him for sure. And I think that's probably why, you know, you look back at the history of Donna Rosa's work, some of that actually came out in Europe before it did in the US. They were so fond of his style too, that, they were actually commissioning him to write stories over there, that would be actually printed in the US second, after it had debuted over there, because they were such big fond of that Barks look and flavor of story that Rosa captured so well.
Yeah, I remember finding out that a lot of the pinups and stuff we would see from Rosa here would originally come from calendars and stuff that they would publish over there. And I was so jealous. I was like, wow, yeah. They're getting calendars full of Don Rosa portraits of the Duck family. And what the hell are we getting, you know? Not that I didn't appreciate the pinups and stuff, but wow, I was so jealous. And one other distinction with the Italian art, too, is I've noticed the Italian art has a very different coloring palette to it. They are much heavier into the reds and yellows.
Yep.
And stuff, and versus the Danish ones that are much more similar to us, and there's less of a, and I don't want to describe it as harsh because that adds a negative connotation, but there is sort of the extreme use of kind of the reds and yellows really jump out at me when I'm reading one of the Italian stories versus reading the Danish or American stories.
Yeah, the other is how Mickey's colored. I mean, instead of the flesh colored on the face and stuff, he's always just stark white and black. Yeah.
Now, how long has Topolino been going on? Did you mention that earlier?
Yeah, so this story here came from 2717, and that was 13 years ago. So they got to be up, you know, north of 3,000 by now, I would think, and probably approaching 3,500. You know, I'm not sure if it's still weekly or if it's moved to like a every 2 weeks format. But yeah, it's just crazy. And part of that, I think, how they're able to support that, it kind of goes hand in hand with the art style, I think, is the way I understand it is they have full on like Disney schools of comic and animation art over in Italy. I mean, you have like a Italia school. That's where the colorist actually came from. It was credited as the Italia school of color with Travis and Nicole Settler as the colorist. And so I think that's kind of where that the art that you see, especially in a lot of the more recent Italian comics, it reminds me a lot of kind of the art style and feel with the current Mickey Mouse shorts have. You know, you had that 2011 to 2018 Mickey Mouse cartoon, and now just within the last month on Disney Plus, a new one has debuted, the Wonderful World of Mickey Mouse with 7-page shorts. It's done in the same animation style, but, you know, looking at this art style from the, you know, around the 2000 era, late 90s, when it really started to take hold in Italy, reminds me a lot of that animation style. And I wonder if, you know, they're kind of influencing each other kind of back and forth. And it stems maybe from this Italian Disney school.
It is amazing their influence around the world, because, like, you know, over the last couple of years, I've been fascinated too that in Brazil, they've, you know, Jose Carioca from the Three Caballeros he had a series that ran from 1961 up through around 2018, I think. And again, I think it went up into the thousands as far as the issues, just like because they had the more European style schedule. And I think even though that series may not be around, I think he still appears in other Disney comics published there. And that's a whole nother universe of Disney stories that we've never seen in this country. And I've picked up a few of those issues here and there online, but of course I can't read Portuguese, so I don't know what they're saying. But I've always wished that we would get, you know, there might be a Disney Masters or two coming of those stories, just because I've been curious to know, you know, I can tell they're very different than we would know the character just from some Three Caballeros stuff, but they've been going on for, you know, 5 or 6 decades now there. Think of all the Disney stories we haven't read from that country.
Yeah, it's crazy. What's really fascinating about just European comic publishing and stuff in general is the format is a lot sturdier, right? The bigger page counts, lot bigger investment. It's kind of more of a finalized package, I guess, kind of a big album size. But you're getting that out weekly or every 2 weeks, right? It's more there. It's more expensive investment. It's higher quality, you know, higher price, but it's kind of meant to be a more permanent thing. Whereas now, you know, in the US, you get part one of six, the story. It's still kind of treated as a disposable format, even if the price doesn't necessarily, you know, go with that, right? And it's just, it's interesting to look at the difference between how they're published, how a story is. Yes, we're kind of miles apart, I guess.
Wow. I meant to ask you, are you getting the Fantagraphics, Karl Barks books and such?
Yes, I am. I don't have them all. I'm a little behind, but I usually get, I have them on my Christmas list and usually get quite a few of them for Christmas. So I'm hoping that after this year, Christmas hits, I'll have pretty much all of them then at that point. And I think I need the last two Don Rosa ones yet too. I think I only have the first eight.
I've been better on the Barks ones. I've gotten to where I only need the most recent one, which I think was Under the Polar Ice Cap, but I'm more behind on my Don Rosa ones, where I still need to get, I think, at least four of them, which I'm starting to worry about the prices going up. But whoever runs Don Rosa's Twitter account, like 2 or 3 months ago, I commented in some thread that he had been tagged in about needing some copies and some of the price going down. It was me or someone else commented on, and whoever runs his account actually posted, "We'll wait because we're reissuing some of the later volumes, so the price will be dropping." So I need to go back and see if that's happened, and I might.
I think it did. Last time I was on the Fantagraphics site looking, when they had like one of their 30% off sales, it looked like they had the last couple on there.
Okay, good. Again. Well, then I'll be able to catch up on that. I've been lately kind of more diving into those Disney Masters you mentioned, and I still need a lot because I do have quite a few, but they've been pumping them out.
Yeah, they pump those out quick. Yeah, I only have a handful of those. I don't have any of the Mickey ones. The few I have gotten have been either Donald or Uncle Scrooge ones.
And I realized recently, I thought I had completed the Floyd Gottfredson Disney books, but when I went back and looked at them, I realized I'm still missing one of the volumes.
Oh.
So I have to go back. And fortunately, when I looked it up, it wasn't, you know, one of the pricey ones, so I could get it. But I was kicking myself because I was sitting here for months thinking I'd actually finish the series. So I had no idea there was still another one out there.
Yeah, I'm way behind on those. I only have the first four or five.
Those I was actually committed to because when my daughter was a few years younger and I first started getting them, she actually got into reading them. And it was like one of the first comics she kind of got into. So that made me really excited. And I was picking them up every, you know, time one came out to keep up to it. But finally, I guess at some point I lost track and missed one of them. Well, you should come back and talk about one of the Gottfredson stories. We can cover one of those.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to, I don't know. You certainly have read way more than I have. When do you think they pick up, or what's kind of the peak?
I much prefer the first decade.
Okay.
When Mickey is more of a rebel, they're less gag oriented and the more adventure oriented. As they go on, they start to get more. He does sort of lean more into the gags, and it gets a little more kind of bizarre. You know, alien shows up and stuff. You know, whereas in the first, you know, 10 years, you still have Mickey as more of the rebel.
Yep.
And you still, and I love that. That's the best Mickey. The Mickey of that era is the best Mickey. And I love that. So I would definitely pick something from, you know, the 30s, very early 1940s, if we were going to cover it. I'd have to think about which one, but that would far and away be my preference.
Yeah, that's the thing with both Mickey and Donald. You know, they typically are just relegated to the gag type stuff now, and kind of at least in the current kind of US take on the characters. And I think I feel bad for a lot of people that are, even they're big Disney fans, they aren't necessarily familiar with kind of the more adventure aspect of both characters back in the Golden Age and stuff. I mean, like you said earlier, you know, those 16 to 20 page Karl Bark epics that are, you know, they're rooted in mystery and adventure and action. I mean, those are a blast to read. I mean, they're straight up the inspiration for Indiana Jones. And so... you know, it's a 20-page comic story that's essentially an Indiana Jones story that talks, you know, touches on archaeology or legend, or, you know, and the action adventure that goes with trying to uncover that. It just happens to be written with and drawn with ducks. So,
yeah, a few weeks ago, we go visit my dad every weekend, and we watch a movie together, and we hang out at this place. And he's 79, and he grew up a comic fan like us. He was never really a Disney comic fan. He was more into, like, superheroes and westerns were his big thing. But a couple weeks in a row, for whatever reason, this channel he had would play the Indiana Jones trilogy. And we would joke that when we came over, he was always watching the end of the third Indiana Jones movie. And so one of the visits, I kind of mentioned, you know, have you ever heard? And I went on my little spiel about how, Carl Barks comic books inspired so much of Indiana Jones, and pointed out some of the scenes in each of the movies, from the, you know, Rolling Rock in the first one to the bridge that they put sand on in the third one and stuff, you know, explaining the comics, and even pulled up a picture of Steven Spielberg hanging out with Carl Barks and kind of explained to him how, both Spielberg and Lucas were fans and owned, you know, his paintings and things. And it was funny because, you know, he was actually really fascinated by it. He had no idea, you know, he doesn't know Disney more than the average person off the street. And it really kind of blew his mind to find out that these old, you know, comic books of these duck characters had inspired these movies that he'd been watching for the last 40 years.
Yeah, I think it blew a lot of people's minds.
And it's a credit to Carl Barks of how talented he was, not only in the quality of the storytelling, but that he would inspire people that would go on to create stuff that literally a billion people around the world have probably enjoyed. So, yep. But, well, we should probably wrap it up soon, but I want to thank you very much for joining me to talk about Carl Barks and Duck Comics, and I appreciate you providing the information summary for the European story. It was very good, and I appreciated it. Can you let people know where they can find you on the internet and our social media?
Yeah, so my podcast, I don't put out episodes all that frequent, but I do have a couple Christmas episodes that'll be coming out. You can find that on Apple Podcasts as KSCGSF Podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at KyleBenning_art, or just search for KSCGSF Podcast. The show and blog headquarters are at KingSizeComicsGiantSizeFun.blogspot.com. Covers all of it. So kind of a lot of the same material type stuff that you might hear on here. I did Pod Fade, but you know, three or four years ago, but I brought it back, the feed this year, and so I put a lot of the, especially the Golden Age material and stuff that I covered, I put a lot of that stuff back up. And so I think I probably have 50-some episodes or so out there, a backlog, and then there will be some new Christmas episodes coming out here this month as well. So including my coverage of that original Christmas on Bear Mountain Carl Barks story. So thanks for having me aboard. This was a blast.
Oh, thank you. And yeah, Kyle is one of the few other shows out there that regularly covers Golden Age material. So if you enjoy it, I would highly recommend checking out his show. And yeah, thank you very much for coming. And I want to thank everyone for listening. And also, you know, I want to wish everyone a very happy holiday. You know, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. This has been not the best year for a lot of us and a lot of people. And I know for me, you know, I've been fairly lucky despite everything going on. But, you know, comic books for me are a big help during times like this. You know, they are a good distraction. They bring me a lot of joy. I think they bring a lot of other people joy. And so I'm very thankful to have them. And I hope a lot of you guys have found some comfort in them as well, and that you and your families have stayed healthy throughout all this. So thank you again. And with that, take care. I'm good.